This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
Welcome. My name is Mary Hines, and today I am bringing the improvisational prowess, and I am joined by...
My name is Mark Lintonmeyer. I'm bringing the supposed philosophy prowess, and we are joined by a special guest.
I'm Seth Stephen Brown. I am a professional muse and an improviser, so I'll hopefully be bringing philosophy and improv today.
Cheeseburger and fries.
Mm.
I was looking at your website, thebarstooltheories.com.
Yes.
And usually a muse is the one who inspires others. It's not the person who themselves is looking for ways to inspire themselves. What is this musing all about here?
Basically, a new version of life coaching that kind of integrates a person's obsessions and stories into the process. So instead of being very stoic or in like static rooms, muses, we go into someone's life with them. We go out, we do events, we hang out together, we see a part of their life. We feel like you hide so much of who you really are from a lot of people. And if the job is to figure out what's going on and what's really up in your life, we have to see what your life is. And so we inspire each other. So muses get inspired by our clients and clients get inspired by us. So it's kind of it's really mutually beneficial and wonderful so far.
So what's the process like for when you're out and about and you're with your client and you feel or see a spark where you want to apply your musing? What happens next?
It's hyper listening, because you're listening for them to reveal truths about themselves and then jump on them in a positive way. So if you hear someone say like, oh, I've never been able to wear these before. That is a feeling of emotion connected to their history. They're really telling you that. They're really honestly admitting something. And if you hear it right in the right moment, you can jump on it and be like, why not? And then you'll find out, oh, well, my mother once told me this didn't look good on me. You have this one statement that has changed your entire life to the point where you're regretting it now. And those are the little things that you can hold on to that you don't realize you're holding on to until someone points them out. And so that's what muses do, is we hyper listen and fix and hear. We listen for what's there and what's not there.
I've heard so many different statistics about how much is nonverbal, but how does body language fit into the communication piece?
I have a whole part about in my training about status, reading people's status. It's a concept they learn in improv, which is about reading the points of vulnerability of you.
Ooh.
Because your status is about how vulnerable you feel at any moment. And so it's about protecting your vital areas, your neck, your chest, your groin. You believe you could be attacked at any point. So I'm just worried sometimes that things might come out of nowhere and surprise me.
Well, Terry, I have to tell you that, you know, I've been racking up your points of vulnerability, and you got a pretty dense scorecard on your points so far.
I told you not to keep track of that without telling me. How bad is it? Is it bad? It's bad.
There's a reason I've been walking around with the big poster board here. You can see all the tally marks here. You got quite a few.
Oh, there's a bunch around my mother. I'm just seeing that right there. There's mom, mom, mother, mother, mom, mother.
Mommy, look, mom, mother, mom, mommy, mother, mom, mommy.
Mom, I'm sorry to interrupt when you're with this guy here, but am I able to wear this now?
Little Bobby, I told you that when mommy's working...
Oh, I'm being very triggered right now.
Need anything. I know. See, here's the thing. Surprise, I'm your mother. I brought our adopted son, little Bobby, along so you could feel more comfortable. Oh, your body's saying you're it. Oh, hold on. That's at least two more ticks on the tally marker.
Oh, no, 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 no. I don't feel like these ticks should belong to me. This should be Bobby's ticks because he's the one increasing this.
I just wanted to see if I could wear the spacesuit now or if this is not a good time.
Bobby, go ahead, put on your spacesuit and then come back and I'll zip up the back.
I've never been able to wear the spacesuit before.
Mommy's working.
All right.
And see.
Right. Great. Well done.
Once you make that face, it's like,
I love it.
I think I missed the key moment. What was Seth's relationship to the two of us, that he was your son, but he was my adopted father? I didn't understand quite what you threw in there.
That's why we're in the session, because everything's all kerfluffled. That's why we're doing the work, because nobody knows who they are.
And a lot of people are trying to be something they're not supposed to be.
Mm.
And that's part of the issue. Is the question I brought to you guys was the philosophy between society and humanity. And I feel like society cannibalizes humanity at every chance it can.
Mm-hmm.
Because society is not trying to help humanity. Society is just trying to help itself. Society's goal is to maintain itself, keep itself alive. And the first thing it'll do is just force people to do things they're not authentically supposed to do just because they're jobs that need doing and not because they're what we're naturally doing. So I think a lot of modern issues are about people trying to fit themselves into boxes when they're not even supposed to be in this field at all. Like no part of them is supposed to do this job.
Yeah.
But they're trying to.
That is so vexing and upsetting to me because society is composed of humanity. So it would logically make sense to have the humans that make up humanity, which then make up society, to be as like healthy and vital as they can be to make society run optimally.
Right. That's the perfect goal. But then you get jerks.
Oh, no.
Who want to take advantages of things. And those are the people who use societal things to their advantage. And that's where it all gets, you know, fluffed up. Humanity is about the bottom row of Maslow's hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Those needs. That's where humanity stays. Food, shelter, warmth, community. Once you get above that, then someone gets to decide what the ranking of everyone else's needs are. That's the issue. Like no one can debate everyone needs food, but then they debate who gets food first. Mm. That's humanity versus society. Mm-hmm. No one can debate everyone needs shelter, but we decide who gets the big houses.
Yeah.
Humanity versus society. Once we get off that bottom rung of needs, suddenly people are like, well, we should do this first. Well, we should do that first. And then my God says this. My politics say that. And I think that issue churns a lot of people's hearts because they don't know who they're supposed to be in that environment. Mm. And they just want to be a good person. Most people just want to get through their day. And yeah, you know, that's what I love about humans. It's like humans are great. Just people are the problem.
I love that. Humans are great. People are the problem. Mark, you have ideas in your eyebrows. I see them.
Well, I'm getting a little stuck on the idea of society as an autonomous system that has needs and requirements and pressures that are independent of particular members of it. It's a familiar thing in philosophy. I was actually just teaching Rousseau, right? Famous for his sort of noble society messes everything up. That, you know, when we are acting out of our natural instincts, we are not selfish. We have compassion for others. I mean, depending on which part of Rousseau you're reading, we have community. But at the very least, our needs are very small. And it's only sort of these cultural things that we adopt that grow our needs, right? This is a very common idea across Stoicism and many other philosophers, that there's so many just the needs of social media, the needs of status, the needs of the latest fashions or whatever. That
tradition. Tradition is dead people telling the living people how to live. Mm-hmm. That is the most bullshit thing in the planet. Like what, my ancestors have decided we're all going to live this way for the next 1,000 years. What? You have no idea what the next 1,000 years are going to look like. How can you say this tradition is going to stay? But that's part of society, is what are the things we value and what are the things we don't.
I can see how societies can get irrational and customs can outlive their usefulness. This is a very common thing. We want to be constantly reevaluating our customs, but to merely throw away the wisdom of the ages, what these people worked very hard to build, I sympathize with conservatism in that sense. Of how many times did somebody, for instance, say, let's try something completely different when it comes to relationships. Let's try it open. I'm not saying it never works. I'm not saying it doesn't work for anybody. But what are the percentages? Like there are good reasons why a lot of the customs are in place. Not all of them.
Well, in this group, it's 1 out of 3. I've been polyamorous for 10 years or 7, actually.
Okay. There are certain other things. I reject the need that society tries to force on us of just take a job, be somebody else's underling. Clearly, that is one that you have not stuck with either, that you've started your own thing.
I spent 20 years trying to be a screenwriter, and I got stuck in post-production. And I saw how unappreciated humanity is in the entertainment industry. It is so brutal what they do to people. Here's the fun part about how brutal the entertainment industry is. Their reward, their first reward, you get your name said to people. That's a reward. Credit. You get to be shown that you're a person. You actually did something. And then they don't pay you. They don't give you a good living wage, but they put your name somewhere. I have a car that I've driven for 10 years. I have no idea who built that. But somehow I get the second assistant's name because they want to not pay him a living wage and instead put his name in the credits. Humanity. They abuse us. Mm-hmm. And that's what the musing is about taking back our humanity in small pieces. Because we can't take everything back, but we can steal back the little moments, the little joys that are just ours.
I wrote down a couple like question points and I love how I wrote this. I wrote, what skill sandwich do you offer? What ingredients do you use when you're musing? Like what of your, because you are multifaceted, like you have a lot of skills. So what ingredients do you find bringing to the sandwich that is musing?
Hyper-listening or hyper-awareness, actually.
Yeah.
Is one of the biggest ones. It's situational awareness and personal awareness. How you're reacting to things. It's basically you have to learn your body before you can learn how everyone else's body is. And so learning your body as an instrument and then using that tool to learn how other people operate either differently or similarly. And that's what musing is helping other people learn their instrument because no one else can make you happy. No one else can fight your fears except you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it. So what musing does is we actually give you the tools to figure yourself out. We don't tell people how to live. We tell people how to, like, these are the things we can do to break down your body. So we have things about like personal assessments. We have things about observation, helping others. Our motto is understanding without judgment.
I have an analogy that I use when I'm teaching improvisation. For anyone who is listening, I am holding up my fingers right now, football goalpost style, to show like a range. So that is your range. That is your bandwidth for creativity and play. If you gunk it up even this much with judgment of yourself or others, you've just limited your sandbox.
Right.
And also improvisation, I adapted as a lifestyle and it's helped me get to a very healthy place mentally, physically, emotionally. And I do my best to practice that. Like, what if I could truly believe that no one is judging me and I'm not judging anyone else? And that's practicing like grace and best intent and greatness looks different on everyone. So what if instead of getting all offended, upset, judgmental, or like down into those low vibrations, I could just be like, great, you are where you're at and I am where I'm at. And that's swell.
That's what a muse does.
Aha.
That's literally what we do is we create safe spaces.
Yeah, safe spaces are so vital.
We create almost personal safe spaces around us of non-judgment and invite people in because we feel like once we're non-judgmental, they're not judgmental of themselves and they reveal so much.
Hey everyone, welcome to the safe space. So as you'll see, we have all of the corners have been padded. There are no sharp edges anywhere.
Okay, you got plugs for the plugs? You got those plugs?
I have the plugs with the plug covers. And you'll find in the middle of the room, there is a giant cloth bowl.
Ooh, mush.
Full of,
I see that.
Of mush. So when you find yourself, if your blood sugar gets
low. May I test the mush?
Please test the mush. Could you sanitize first? Here, have some sanitizer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead and dip on into the mush. You're looking a little shy. Are you scared to be in the safe zone? This is the safe zone, safe place.
Has this safe space been tested by a professional? I'm just worried about knocking my head on things. I'm sort of worried that I'm my own worst enemy, and I'm just not sure how the safe space is going to protect me from myself.
Well, you know, Tristan, the best way to test a safe space is to just go into it. Just throw yourself into it. We have wood
ooh.
Chips on the floor. You know, so you...
Ooh. I found some bubble-wrapped suits in here.
Bubble-wrapped suits.
I'm gonna put one of these on.
They're one size fits all.
Oh, I feel so safe.
Tristan,
this is the first time I felt safe.
I'm just going to do the worm a few times. Let me just see if this...
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
Do some popping and locking. Do some slam dancing.
Yeah, how are you feeling?
It seems pretty safe. So what is the goal? I mean, just to be?
Just to be.
Like, are we accomplishing something?
And you can send me Venmo or Zelle. It's $125 an hour. End scene. Sorry, no,
and
wait.
You can send me Venmo or Zelle.
I shouldn't have cut it then. I should have held for a minute to see Tristan/Mark's reaction.
I think that's fine. I think we had not established what our relationship is, but you just established it right there that I'm a customer.
Well, here's the thing about improvisation is we can spell it out and I can be like, I am the proprietor. You are my customers.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can show my status by being like, I know where everything is. I have built this, right? So
yeah.
There's ways to establish relationship without expressly saying you are the customer and I am the proprietor.
Yeah.
I want to stop and tell you about Rula.
which is a healthcare provider group that can connect you with a mental health expert optimal for your needs. And best of all, here's the real differentiator. They work with over 100 insurance companies, so your online therapy sessions are covered by your insurance. The average copay for Rula patients is $15, but depending on your benefits, your copay could be as little as $0 per session. Rula's network includes over 15,000 licensed, carefully vetted therapists and psychiatrists nationwide. And when you sign up, they're going to start by first determining, are you looking for couples, family therapy, individual therapy, or psychiatry, that is medication management, and then tell them more about what specifically you're looking to get out of this. They're not just going to give you the first therapist that's available. They're going to find one that's actually attuned to what you have said. But yet, this is still all very quick. If you're initiating therapy, they know that you want therapy soon, and their appointment's available as soon as tomorrow. The scheduling is built right into Rula's interface, and Rula is committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way on your mental health journey. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. Visit Rula.com/improv to get started. After you sign up, you'll be asked how you heard about them. Please support our show and let them know we sent you. That's Rula.com/improv. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget.
Familiarity is always a fun way to play with things. It's like, Jeannie, you're always doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You're always buying too much. You're always buying too many things that you don't need to impress people you're never going to meet, darling. Why do you do this?
Well, how else am I going to grow in society unless I have all the tchotchkes and wigglewams?
No, darling. No, 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 no. It's not about the tchotchkes on the outside. It's the tchotchkes on the inside, darling. We've got to work on your heart tchotchkes.
But if you could buy me that beautiful alligator skin purse, my heart will shine brighter.
This time it's an alligator skin purse. Last week it was a chair made out of a grizzly bear, darling. This is getting ridiculous.
I'll lower the price. $50 for the alligator skin purse.
Oh, honey, that's a you know what? You're my grizzly bear.
Tony, you are an enabler. This shop is entirely too dangerous for my wife.
All right, with the alligator skin purse, I'll pour in. This is an actual pterodactyl claw.
Oh,
it's,
honey, that's rare.
Fossilized. So we're gonna just put out an extra $10 for it. Absolutely authentic. Yeah, it's gonna change your life.
I need this, honey.
$10 pterodactyl claw.
$10 pterodactyl claw.
I mean, you get what you pay for. You know, it's the authenticity only goes to a certain point.
I love it.
Yeah, you get what you pay for with pterodactyl claws. Let me tell you.
I love that.
All right.
Super.
All right, so we don't need to end a scene because we didn't really start the scene officially.
No, that was
so,
like a little scene. No. That was like a little
that was
scene
a scene lit.
Lit. That was like a nice burp after, you know, a good meal.
It was like a tag out.
Yeah.
Or like a quick spin out in the pretty flower.
To be thoroughly honest, I wish I'd spent a little more time with your website, because the only thing I find more sketchy than self-help is here's a service whereby I will assist your self-help.
No, I get that.
That's just my prejudice coming in to this, as if you've been doing your life wrong all this time. Here, I've got these secrets. But on the other hand, what you're saying is, you know, sounds very... Of course, you want to pay attention to what you really want, you want to do, and I'm sure there are multiple ways to get there, so it's not like you're claiming, this is not Scientology, this is not a cult of adopting a completely new language to assess yourself, or is it?
I sound so pretentious when I say all this shit. Thoughtcraft is what I call it. It's creating these little mental levers that you can give to anybody, not philosophers, but like average people. You can give them this, like, think about this, and that'll help them understand themselves a little bit better. Like, that's what I think is philosophy and kind of mental health has always been kind of safeguarded behind a wall of like, okay, well, you have to be certain, like, if you want to do it, you have to be certified, you have to do all this. And then we can tell you what's wrong with people. And then we'll tell you what's wrong. And then every doctor I talk to still doesn't know a lot. Like, everyone's still working out. If you go 20 years back and just look at the mental health philosophy every 20 years, it's a completely different philosophy. Since Freud.
No, I get that as a, in my philosophical reading, history of psychology is a big thing. In fact, one of my co-hosts on my main philosophy podcast is a like licensed psychotherapist, has patients and stuff.
Right.
And I still find, you know, the little that I've dabbled with it, we had a sponsor
that gave me some free therapy. And I tried, and it was sort of exactly what I expected in terms of cognitive behavioral. Oh, you're having trouble exercising every day? Well, let's think of some triggers that we could set up to make you able to do these. And I just felt like, well, I just could figure this shit out myself. I mean, it's not unreasonable, but like, I wouldn't want to pay somebody for this on a regular basis.
That's my problem with every certified therapist.
Uh-huh.
Because a certification means standardization and it means sterilization.
Mm.
And once you're standardized and sterilized, you are only going to help a certain amount of people. That's what happened to me in the fucking education system in this country. It almost destroyed me because I was being put in a box. That's my problem with standard therapy is you read all these books, but you know what? It's not in those fucking books. The person who's sitting in front of you. You shouldn't be thinking about the book. You should be sitting about the person, the human in front of you, analyzing them, using your humanity to find out who they are instead of like, okay, what chapter can I recommend?
Well, I feel like
I hate that bullshit.
What you're proposing, Seth, requires more work on the part of the practitioner. It requires that they escalate their level of fucks given and they apply more of themselves and they open their heart more and they are more vulnerable, authentic, and intimate in the transaction, which, you know, as someone who teaches improvisation and coaching, and I have a pet sitting business for a living, like my heart has to be consistently open. But I find that the more that I do that, the more my business expands and I have to turn down at least 3 clients a week because I'm so booked because I've chosen to present myself in all of my muppety, nerdy glory. I just sent a video. I'm taking care of 2 French bulldogs right now. And the video I sent today was Bodyguard Bodie. He's sitting next to me right now with his bum against my foot. Call him Bodyguard Bodie. And it was a video of me petting him and being like, oh, who's my ham sandwich? Oh, you're a ham sandwich with melty cheese on a pretzel roll. And then the other dog came up and I was like, oh, look, it's the turkey BLT. So a me in the past would have been like, you are weird. That is strange. They're going to think you're crazy. And the me now, who knows that's my most authentic self, feels comfortable sending the humans of my animal clients a video of me talking about what sandwich they are. And they absolutely loved it. And they're like, oh, we're so happy. Things are going well.
Easiest piece of advice I can give to anybody.
Give it.
You have to give yourself permission to be yourself. And that is very simple, but it's not easy because there are so many people have told you throughout your life,
yep,
don't do this, don't do that, don't be that. And you have to go through and kind of deprogram each one individually. That's what I do is I listen for the program marks. I listen for those points where I'm like, wait, that sounds a little irrational. Can we dig into that? Can we dig into that spot? Because that's what I'm hearing. I'm listening for irrationalities or things that don't make sense emotionally to what they're saying.
And Mark, I see what you're saying about the skepticism of like, why hire someone to help you know yourself? But not everyone is capable of knowing themselves, which sounds kind of like a silly thing to say, but people need help.
I think the idea of knowing yourself is deeply problematic because it assumes that there is a stable thing that you can uncover and know. And of course, there's certain respects in which that's going to be true. You're going to find that you enjoy certain things and you don't enjoy certain things. And until you try them, until you get beyond society telling you, you should never try this kind of thing, you're not going to discover that kind of thing about yourself. But so much about the creation of the self is a creation, is a development, is an artistic project. So it is, Seth, you're nodding. So I'm guessing that this does not actually cause any trouble for your method, that it can be equal parts discovery and creation. And that's just all in the authenticity bubble.
Yeah. It's being the real person you are. It's figuring out the things that are in the way of who you really are. What you do when you get there, that's someone else's job. It's a part of helping interpret the things because sometimes people just don't have experience. They just don't realize. You could be the greatest horse rider on the planet, but you've never been on a horse.
Hey, welcome to the self store. Go ahead and you can grab a hand basket or you can grab a cart and feel free to shop the aisles and pick your personality.
Yeah, I'm here to make a return.
Oh, yes, we do returns and exchanges. Yeah, come on over to the desk.
Uh-huh.
Yes, uh-huh. How may I help you?
I have no joy in this personality.
Oh, no.
I was here last week. I bought this. I came in. I was
boisterous, and I said, I need to take this down a notch. And you said, it's, well, it wasn't you. It was the other gentleman here who had the hat on.
Yes, that's anyway, Daryl. He's new. He's new to the cell.
Oh, yes. He was so sweet, so nice. But as I said, I wanted to come down a little, and I feel like I got taken way down. I mean, I sound like I'm a Southern gentleman now, and I came in as a New Yorker from the Bronx.
Can you show me what you purchased?
Oh, here. Let me take this off real quick. Yeah, you see, this is way too, it's weird. That was a weird personality. I don't know what I put that on, okay?
That's because you selected the shame beanie.
Oh!
This is the shame beanie, honey.
Oh! That's what that was. Oh, I thought that was a weird Met symbol.
This was one of my customers. So, yeah. He didn't like the beanie?
No.
You turned me into Mark Twain with that thing. I just wanted to get taken down a lift.
Daryl, if you could just take this shame beanie, because now, get it, take it quick.
I don't understand why you shame and Southern. What's the connection between the shame and the Southern? I'm not ashamed of my drawl. I've got as thick a drawl. Born in Tennessee, you can hear it in my voice. I've never gotten over it, but yet I'm not ashamed of this. Oh, wait a second. I'm wearing the T-shirt. Let me just take the.
Yeah. See, the thing is,
I'm not ashamed of my drawl one bit. I wear this beanie. You got a problem with people that talking this way? Let me just put the shirt back on. Okay. Now, can you understand me now? I know it's a little hard to understand.
I got you. Yeah, these audio adjusting clothes are real new.
Here's the thing. It's not one size fits all, you know, and some people react differently to different personality shop blends. So, you know, this is the poly cotton blend. So what if instead of the shame beanie, what if we got you the easily accessible to joy scarf? Try this one on.
Oh, that's got a Celtic knot on it.
It does.
Oh, no, I'll take that.
How's that feel?
Oh,
yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
No, it's starting to come back.
Yeah.
There it is. Oh, the light and the joy.
That is going to be a $15 upcharge. That's not an even exchange. I'm so sorry.
Do you take euros?
Oh, of course we do.
Excellent. I'm not sure. Wait, if I'm from North Ireland, I'm not. If I do, wait.
Daryl, I think you should help. You know how we have the bin for employees where you can, you know, take back any returns?
Yeah.
Why don't you fish around in the bin of positivity and you can take home a new accessory? You know, I'm the manager. I can do what I want. It's my store.
Okay. Just I've been a little uncomfortable, you know, just I got the T-shirt. It seems like that sort of normed me out.
Yeah.
And people generally accept me now. I'm feeling like I'm happy. I'm feeling like this is the real me.
Oh.
That my Tennessee roots, despite the fact that I have no shame about it, they tend to get in the way. I couldn't get hired really literally anywhere else besides here. So
yeah, your resume was pretty awful.
Yeah. I got fired from a lot of places, mostly for you know, all the corn cob pipes and bragging about my days on the riverboat and, you know, just all the stuff that goes with being from that part of the country.
You know, sometimes the stereotypes weigh us down. And that's why we've just installed the personality spa wash. So if you feel like you need to rinse off the shit that doesn't belong to you, you can just jump in the wash and you can reset.
All right. I'm interrupting a customer interaction here, but let me just maybe this could be an advertisement that a gentleman that you might want to. I'm just going to try here. Let me just jump in the shower, do the thing. Just for
it's
a second.
Like in chemistry class when you get chemicals in your eyes or something.
Motherfucker!
Oh,
let's go!
Oh.
All right, I think that's probably a way to stop.
And scene.
But that was the real for him.
I love that the real you is an absolutely feral demon. Great. I mean, we got there.
There's a reason he never had a job, but it was not because of a Southern accent.
It was revealed through the art of musing.
Mm.
Yeah. I've known Mary for a few years, and I feel like she is very authentic to who she is now. Mark, where do you feel you are versus your authentic? Do you feel like you get to be yourself most of the time or no?
I feel like I've been long incapable of being consistently anything but. When I was a young man, I was romancing, I would tell, you know what, actually I'm incapable of lying in any serious way. And they would think, oh, that you must be
That's just a line. But I mean, it's more or less true. I'm just not good at maintaining any sort of facade. So when I have worked in office environments, it's not good. It's not, you know, I make too many jokes. I fall asleep at my desk. Like, that's why I work from home and do podcasting and stuff now. Because whether it is a choice or simply my temperament, I do not know.
I think we are who we are. And like finding out where we want to be the most is kind of what the second half of our life is about. That's actually my target demo is like, you know, 30s, 40s, people who have either had kids or like decided not to. Because I feel like one of the things about society right now is we have a plan for the first half of your life very easily. Go to school, get a job, get a family, send your kids off. Then what? Literally, there is no plan after that. It's so open and so many people get caught up not having a plan for the second half of their life. It kind of like that's what a midlife crisis to me, at least mine was. That's how I started this. Like I was working in the entertainment industry and then I was working in corporate for 2 years. And one day I was just like, I sat down and I'm like, okay, I think I'm a relatively smart guy. I really do. If I'm so smart, why am I not happy? And that sent me down this road of like self-discovery and figuring out what was in my way. And I kind of reevaluated myself, my life from a story point of view, because that's what I knew. And I realized if I was a character in a movie, who would I be right now? And I felt like I was a misunderstood genius who just hadn't had a chance to do something that they were good at. And I just needed to figure out what that was. And once I put that narrative in my head, it felt right. And it just snowballed from there. And I'm just like, if this is who I am, kind of just checking in with myself, figuring out what's going on. And I realized as I was doing this, this is a process that could help other people. Is like, who are you in your story right now? Like, if you're a fan of football, like, what part of the plan do you need? What play do you need? If you love this book series, this is the way I work is, are you fans of Tolkien?
Sure.
Lord of the Rings?
Yes. Sure. Yes.
Okay. If my client was a Tolkien fan and they were going through some like shit, my question to them would be, okay, are you a gray wizard or a white wizard right now? And what is the Balrog you haven't faced yet or have faced? I've given that to a Tolkien fan and that opened their mind completely up because that's a world that they're obsessed with. So they believe it. They understand the emotions of it. So that's what my work is. It's like figuring out what you, like, what's the question I can ask you specifically that's going to get your mind to go, oh, I understand me now.
What I'm hearing is it's about actively listening, affirming, and communicating in the language of the person you're speaking with. I'm currently in a new relationship and it's very exciting and it's going very well. I know, Seth, you didn't know. This is fun tea.
Well, is this a scene or are you telling me?
No, this is actual. This is my actual life. Yeah. Oh, we could talk. We could talk tea, not in podcast, but it was after our first date. I looked really hot, obviously, right? And to me, like he is showing me through his behavior that he's into me, right? Like that is clear to me. However, something that is important to me is hearing that I'm beautiful. You know, like those words of affirmation.
Words of affirmation.
Those words of affirmation are important to me. So between our first and second date, I said, and this was a very vulnerable thing, I took this risk and I said, it made me a little bit upset when you didn't tell me how beautiful I looked. So I want to let you know that one of my love languages are words of affirmation. And so that sparked a conversation about what his love language is. And last night we were making dinner and he was like, I felt so bad when I didn't tell you you looked beautiful. And I was like, you could choose to feel bad if you want to. Or you can let that go because that led us to a beautiful conversation. And I told him my inner thoughts about it. I was like, I had a thought, like ego Mary was like, this isn't going to work because he doesn't tell you that you're beautiful. But I said to that voice, hey, calm down. He doesn't know what I need until I communicate what I need.
Exactly.
But I have to know myself to be able to say that and to allow a potentially uncomfortable moment for me to say, hey, you didn't do this. I felt this. This is something that I need. Please and thanks.
You need to understand yourself. You need to recognize it, rationally deal with it, process it yourself, be able to communicate it, know who you want to communicate it to, and then be able to communicate it in a way that isn't judgmental. You hit everything. You did it all. Like, you know, we're in a wave of emotional intelligence now where we're talking about our feelings more. And so eventually you got to, you know, your love language is so important.
We might be treading on the ground from our last conversation with Vicky, Mary. One of the ways I feel like when I was a younger person, I perhaps abused this look how authentic I am is, well, this is just how I am. You want me to be the kind of person who's going to compliment you? If I don't feel like I'm that kind of person, you know, so I think there's at least ways in which this being who you are can be used in a way that does not. This is what I like about, we don't have a special authentic thing that we're discovering because we can actually open ourselves up to another person. I have had a history when I was a younger person of maybe too much becoming what that other person wanted me to be.
Losing yourself in that, yeah.
That's codependence.
Sure.
And part of all of this is also having healthy boundaries, because being yourself is you have to have rigid or soft boundaries.
I was going
to
say soft, flexible, adjustable.
It's like, no, like porous.
Porous.
You can have rigid or porous boundaries where things can pass through. Really is about balance. Everything is about balance. It's about being in the middle of the storm, being in the eye of who you are so you can see all the pieces as they're moving. But some people use authenticity as a shield, and actually they use it as a weapon. Mm. It's like the whole keeping it real thing is kind of bullshit. It's like, I'm going to keep it real. Like, you don't get to keep it real just to be able to say something hurtful to someone because it's true. The truth is the truth, no matter what it is. But it can be used gently. It can be used forcefully. And how you use it defines how other people are going to want to hear it from you. And so, like, there are people, like, I used to be like guy who's like, yeah, I'll just, well, I'm just being honest. I'm being honest. And then what happens with me is I'll hear a lyric. I'll hear something for a second time and I'll finally understand it. The Depeche Mode song, The Policy of Truth. If you listen to that, that song defines you should not tell people the truth all the time. It will destroy your relationships. Like, that's what that song is about, is being too honest and to some people who aren't ready for it. Never again is what you said the time before. You keep doing it. You keep, like, blasting me with truth. Because we can blast each other with truth. We always can, because it's true. But we choose how to fire it.
Yeah. I like what you said about hard versus porous boundaries. So since I let my romantic confidant know how I like to be loved, I then chose the elective course of doing more work with myself. Like, why do I need that? Do I really need that? How can I soften it? Where is that coming from? So I enrolled in the elective course of where did I shop that personality trait from? And I've been actively softening through the moments where I feel like I'm not getting the verbal affirmation I like. And instead, I'm looking at the fact that, like, he came over last night and we made eggplant parmesan from scratch. And I'm like, that is big. That is a huge, right? Like, so me softening what I think I need to receive what is showing up.
If you allow the recipe to manufacture, like to adjust, you will find some incredibly tasty dishes in the world.
Tasty.
But you need the recipes to adjust.
Mark, your face is thinking. I see it.
I'm just trying to think about what would be a good seed to launch based on this. Mm. Did you have an idea?
Well, honey.
Yes, baby.
Your father and I want to talk to you about your elective, your body elective choices.
Okay, but okay. Is it going to make me late for cheerleading practice? I can't be late.
You're electing to have your ankles removed, honey.
That's right. They're too skinny. And skinny ankles, everybody knows that skinny ankles mean poverty.
Honey, when you said you wanted elective surgery, we thought we were going to get you a nose job or something not cute. But taking your ankles out, honey, that's a support structure for your entire skeleton system.
Listen, I'm too tall and I'm
tired. Oh, there it is. You are not too tall, darling. You are not.
I'm tired of people.
You come from big people.
I'm tired of people asking me, where's the flood, Darlene? It makes me sad, Ma and Pa. It makes me feel awkward and strange like a tall poppy. And I don't want to be a tall poppy. I want to be a dainty dandelion.
Your mother's saying some valuable stuff, but I just got to say, I think that there are other solutions. I think you are too tall, but I think there are maybe less drastic solutions. I just got to say it like it is. I just got to be real.
This is your father's. Her grandfather had huge ankles. Do you know what they called him in World War II? They used to call him Trench Foot.
Trench Foot.
Because he would dig trenches with his just one foot. He was so big ankled.
I don't want to be a freak. I want to be normal.
There's good money in being a freak. And it's really just a matter of emphasizing, like, you know, when
Your mother's got the beehive hairdo. Have you thought of getting one of those so you could actually just de-emphasize your ankles by making something else taller?
There you go, honey.
Yes.
There you go.
The Marge Simpson sort of strategy.
That would make...
Longer is better, baby.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I mean, the question, if you're asking, am I too tall for what? I mean, to get in the playground equipment?
Here's the thing. I'm bigger than all the boys. You know how when a puppy is growing into its paws,
mm-hmm.
I just feel like I'm flopping around on these big paws and I'm taller than all the boys and I want to be demure. I don't want to be big no more, Ma.
I'm so sorry, honey. I'm a tiny lady myself, but you didn't get my jeans.
Daddy, it's your fault.
I think that you just need to find a real man like me who's that much bigger than you. And then you're not going to feel so small by comparison. You're wanting the affection from these tiny men with their tiny soles and their tiny little ankles.
It's all I have available.
I think we just need to move to the big city. I think this has shown that this town is too small for you, darling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big girl in the big city.
Big girl in the big city. And sing. That was so fun. I love that. Also, not me pulling exactly from trauma that I've healed through being 6 feet tall with a big personality.
Yeah, I saw it in your eyes.
Yes. Yeah, but here's what I've been focusing on as an improvisational artist and character actor. I've been focusing on transmuting points of stress and pain into laughter.
Yes.
Just the other day, I did a set as I was ghosted. And I made a ghost costume and I had a wig and I like did a whole thing and I wrote a whole set and did audience engagement about taking our power back from being ghosted and bringing humor to it to transform it from the low vibration of like, fuck my life, woe is me, I can't get a date, dating apps suck, to like, I got ghosted, you did too, that's crazy. Yeah, so transmuting, you know, points of trauma into humor using satire.
Like, I love this because, like, one of my philosophies is let it turn silly. When you go through some shit,
I like that.
Eventually, it will turn silly
mm-hmm.
because Carol Burnett said,
my queen,
comedy is tragedy plus time. So reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
Once tragedy hits, wait, it will become funny. It will become funny if you wait it out. And it's just like allowing the emotion to get through because the world is so God. Damn ridiculous. Everything is so silly. Everything is silly from a certain perspective. And just allowing that to kind of let it turn silly.
I feel like it extracts some of the venom out of it. I refer to the current president in our administration as Tangerine Palpatine. And I commented on a political post, right? It was that person was talking about someone in his administration being like Darth Vader. And so I very simply put in the comment, this is why I refer to him as Tangerine Palpatine, exclamation point. It has received over 3,000 likes and comments of people. I just watched it balloon as I was just like, oh, this is not that funny. This is just a thing that I do. And someone being like, you won the internet. And like, thank you so much for this. So I was just observing that there is power through humor. And I feel like it sucks out the venom and it flips it back from like, I am powerless to I am powerful.
For those of you listening to this in the future, right now we're going through all these protests of things and No Kings things. And one of the biggest protests is in Portland, Oregon, where people went out to protest against other people in inflatable outfits. They put up the silliest things they could because the movie Toys with Robin Williams, its famous quote is, I'm going to fight fire with marshmallows. Like that is what you have to do is we have to attack them with as silliness as possible because how can you fight that? Like how can you moralistically knock down a person in a little tiny costume? We're going to fight fire with marshmallows.
I like that a lot. That's a gift.
Well, that all seems very sensible. I think it's the clock is wrapping. The clock is ending. Clocks are disappearing. They're not just reaching a particular time. The time itself is rolling to a stop. So I think we do need to stop. So thanks, Seth.
Again, oh, thank you. This has been amazing.
TheBarstoolTheories.com if you want to learn more about his dealio. Thanks, listeners. Thanks for supporting. Again, it's philosophyimprov.com or patreon.com/philosophyimprov if you want to hear the ad-free version. Bye, everybody.
Toodaloo.
Bye. I shall sell my soul. Bankrupt. 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 Bankrupt.